You are listening to Studio 41.
Hello and welcome to Quiz Time India. This week on the show, we have Adil Aziz.
The name of the world's first cloned cat is...
I know this. And you know what?
What did Outlook magazine humorously describe as...
Robert was tired from writing this...
One of the best filmmakers there is out there.
The character sort of needed a sidekick. And... So put on your thinking caps and fasten your seatbelts. The show is about to begin. Welcome to Quiz Time India, India's first quizzing and trivia podcast. Did you know, when trying out a new pen, 97% of the people write their own name? Or did you know, 90% of everything written in English uses just 1,000 words? If you didn't know such literal and non-figurative facts, you have come to the right place, the right podcast, Quiz Time India. First up, to begin the episode, I need to thank all the people who have donated to the podcast in the last few weeks. Pratyayan, Kunal, Sudeep, Sri Lakshmi, Raghvi, Ajinkya, and also the anonymous users who were kind enough with their money but did not leave a name behind. Thank you all of you who have been an excellent audience and who have been an excellent supporter of the podcast. I couldn't have asked for anything better. Remember, you can support us by contributing to the podcast. You can donate to keep the show running. You can go to www.instamojo.com/@studio41pod or www.paypal.me/studio41pod. We even have a UPI ID now, so you can go check it out in the description. Basically, you can contribute whatever you like. We work on a pay what you like basis. No amount is less and every penny counts. Once again, the links are in the description. Quick shout outs to the two newsletters. Discontent, it has crossed more than 250 subscribers and has completed more than 20 editions. All of this is for free. Is your friendly algorithm free recommendation newsletter. You can check it out on discontent.substack.com. And the other newsletter is the one which is about the game that we love, the game that I love, which is cricket. The newsletter is called Cricket Quota and it's got a gist of all the cricketing action from around the world. If there are cricket matches, cricket stories, cricket memes, anniversaries of great games and performances, you will get it all in your inbox for free. This week we'll be talking about the 100. What an experiment. For this, all you have to do is go to cricketquota.substack.com. Once again, the link for both the newsletters is in the description. Now, let us get to some quizzing. First of all, there has been a pending audience question. Ami Guradia was on the show last time, and this was her question.
It goes like this. Now, behaving like a country, this society of people is trying to become the next new country. They seceded from a country in 1991, which is the most unstable country. The new peoples are relatively peaceful, stable, and democratic. They were once a British colony and the parent country an Italian colony. Other than this difference in colonial heritage, little differentiated them. When the colonies gained independence in 1960, they unified within a week. But after a horrific civil war of the 1980s and after 31 years together, these peoples declared independence. In the following years, the original country collapsed into chaos, warring factions fought for control, and followed by the Al-Qaeda-linked terrorist groups doing the same. This breakaway society, meanwhile, started to build a relatively free and stable democratic system and says that it is a functioning country that deserves recognition. Name the geographical territory.
And the correct answer was Somaliland. Thank you all who sent in the answers. Well done. And now to this week's episode. This week on the show, we have Adil Aziz. Adil is a producer and filmmaker from Bangalore, India. His love for art and filmmaking is outranked possibly only by his obsession for board games, action figures, and pop culture classics. He runs The Fictionary, an ad film, music video, and film production company based out of Mumbai, and strives to inspire conversations on identity, social structures, and the state of our natural environment. He is, and this might be interesting to all of you, he's also one of the co-founders of Quiz Pro Quo, fun weekly quizzes for the casual amateur quizzer. And on that note, everybody, welcome to Quiz Time India. Hello and welcome to Quiz Time India. This week, as always, we have a special guest with us, a special guest with whom we will be trading trivia with, to whom we'll be telling stories and from whom we'll be listening stories and also asking questions and basically doing all the great stuff. Welcome, Adil. Welcome to the podcast. It's good to have you here.
Hi, Aditya. Thank you. Thank you for having me. Very, very excited.
Awesome. So, Adil, for you and for those listeners who are joining us for the first time, there are always some new listeners, which is also a good thing. The idea behind this podcast is that I have a set of questions with me and you also have a set of questions with you. We both take turns asking each other these questions. And basically, the objective is at the end of the question, we and along with us, the audience gets to learn something new, something cool, something fun, which basically opens our horizons and blows our minds over. So is that clear, Adil? Shall we start?
Yes, sir. Loud and clear. Loud and clear.
All right. So as is the tradition on the show, since I am the host, I'll make you feel comfortable and I'll ask the first question. The first question for today is a rather simple question, and the year is 1904, and I'm describing something which happened in 1904, and these are a bunch of people who are involved in this thing, is what I'll call it for now. So 1904, one person was using a car, one person died from rat poison. Another person was in dress pants and shoes while doing this activity or this thing. Another ate rotten apples, had muscle cramps, and took a nap. One had complications because of inhaling clouds of dust. Also, it was this instance when it took the longest time ever to complete this activity. What activity were these gentlemen doing? So, there's something which is being done for a long time since 1904. I mean, before that also for that matter. But 1904 is a very peculiar year because in that year, one person was, while doing this activity, was using a car. Another died from rat poison. One was in fancy pants and shoes. One ate rotten apples and someone inhaled a cloud of dust. And it, of course, took a whole lot of time for these people to actually do what they were supposed to do. So, Adil, you have to tell me what activity were these gentlemen doing?
It's specific to gentlemen, you're saying? It's not a...
Oh, yes. So, yeah. That's a bit of a hint for you there. It is gentlemen.
I think I've got it. 19, it's a marathon, right? I'm assuming. Like some kind of a sporting decathlon or a event of some sort like that.
Yes. So, you are absolutely correct. Yes. That is exactly what had happened. This is a very peculiar marathon which was run in 1904 Olympics, since Olympics were right around the corner. So I thought we'll start with the Olympics question. And this was an article by the Smithsonian, and it's quite interesting. It was the first time a black African actually participated in the Olympics, and one person was chased by feral dogs. The man who wore dress pants and shoes wore so because he lost all his money in gambling while he was in the city and had not eaten anything for 40 hours. Thus, he was also the person who ate rotten apples because he was hungry. He didn't have anything for 40 hours. And those apples gave him muscle cramps, and he also took a nap while he was doing the marathon.
Now, this sounds like a marathon that I would love running, you know, with a lot of rest and breaks in the middle.
Possibly. That is something that at least us mere mortals would do. I would give up the race halfway through. I don't know why he continued, but he did continue. And the one who used the car in the middle of the race came first. And the one who ate rat poison thought that the rat poison was supposed to work as like a performance enhancing drug. And it would help him to complete the race. I actually don't know if he did complete the race or not, but that's what they did. That was what happened in 1904 Olympic marathon. Amazing.
Excellent question. Yeah, very cool. I'm going to use this somewhere down the line. Heads up.
Definitely. So now it's your turn to ask a question and the rules stay the same.
So I want to start off with something very simple myself as well. And the whole idea behind what we've been doing as a quizzing community is to get and encourage people who are new to quizzing to come on board. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always that phobia with quizzing, right? That the competitiveness, may not be smart enough. So our goal is to break that stigma and of course not make it too easy, definitely.
Mm.
So my first question to you, Aditya, is that you probably know that the world's first cloned animal was a sheep named Dolly.
Yeah.
But do you know what the name of the world's first cloned cat is?
I know this. And you know what? In fact, I came to know about this a few weeks earlier. And I, in fact, used it in one of my quizzes also. And it's such a quizzer's trivia. It's so simple. It's so elegant. And yet it brings a smile to your face. Since it was a cat and she got copied, it was a copycat, the first
cloned
cat.
Correct, sir. Everything that you've described about this question is what attracts me to it. It's such a quizzer's trivia, brings a smile on your face, you know, all of it. It's just so beautiful in terms of just general deduction. That's all it takes to get through to it.
And as you said, normally we have these questions, right? That is exactly what I try to do with the podcast also. That's why the story comes in, because that just makes it relatable to a lot of us. There are a lot of questions that I would have no idea about. But if you tell a story which sort of makes it relatable, the fact that sticks, people just remember it and it just becomes much more enjoyable. And now, every time you see, talk about copied cats or cloned cats, you would know that at least our audience will remember the first cloned cat was called a copycat.
Yes, very much. And I think that's the important factor in any community, right? The level of relatability that you can bring to it,
mm-hmm.
it gets easier to build from that going forward.
Yes. You will definitely love the next question, because the question is about something, as we said, relatable. Yes, all of us can relate to it, especially us kids who grew up in India. I mean, all over the world for that matter. It is something that we all have encountered. And we are talking about one Robert Record. Record is spelled as R-E-C-O-R-D-E. So Robert Recorde or Robert Record is the name. And Robert, I'll just call him Robert. Robert was among one of the most influential mathematicians of his time.
Okay.
He worked as the Royal Court Physician for King Edward VI and Queen Mary.
Okay.
He is known for something he did in his book called the Whetstone of Wit. Whetstone of W-I-T-T-E.
Okay.
So he wrote a book called the Whetstone of Wit, and in that book he did something for which he's known. In the book, he introduced the concept of Gemov lines. It is G-E-M-O-W-E, Gemov or Gemov lines.
Okay.
And basically what these lines did, they prevented him from some exhaustive work.
Okay.
He introduced these lines because he wanted to make his work a little easier. Although it did not gain much popularity, as the term AE, the letters A and E are welded together.
Okay.
I won't tell you what that term is called. So think of small case A and small case E, both welded together. That term was popularly used, and it was a while until Robert Record's Gemov lines became acceptable all over the world. So basically, in between all of this, you have to tell me what concept did he introduce that we all are familiar with.
Okay.
I'll quickly repeat all the things. So we are talking about one Robert Record, and he was a mathematician. He was, among other things, also the Royal Court Physician for King Edward VI and Queen Mary. He wrote a book called Whetstone of Wit, in which he introduced the concept of Gemov lines, and his idea was these Gemov lines will save him a lot of exhaustive work, and it'll make his life easier, it'll make his make his work easier. Although it did not gain popularity back then, because there was already a term which was AE, the letters AE, it was already in wider use, and eventually though, over time, people understood that what Robert Record had suggested was the best thing to do, and slowly everyone around the world started taking notice of it, and it became popular, and it is now a worldwide common standard of sorts. Like, that is the way you do it. That is exactly what it is. And to give you some time period, Whetstone of Wit was written in around 1557. So that is a timeline that we are looking at. So it's been a while since then.
It's been a long time. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, drawing sort of a blank here. Although math is an interesting subject, never my go-to for anything. But I'm assuming that it's something basic arithmetic style. When you say AE, when you say AE, is it like how we use IE? Like that is? Is that what you were talking about?
Yeah, that would be an abbreviation. So what I would ask you to imagine here is the small case letter A and a small case letter E. Yeah, if you look at it, an A and an E are sort of like mirror images, right?
Correct, yes.
And they're attached together. Actually, this symbol is called aequus.
Oh.
That was the name of the symbol, A-E-Q-U-A-L-I-S. This A and E attached. As you can see, even the name starts with A-E.
A-K, yes, understood.
Yeah, and that was what it was known when Robert wrote the book. And Robert was tired from writing this particular phrase again and again, and as it was widely used in writing mathematical things. And he replaced it with Gemmell lines, and that became a standard.
I think the name kind of gave it away for me when you bought it. Is it the equal sign, the equal logo that we use in like formula, like 1 plus 1 equals 2? So that sign?
So, yes, you are absolutely correct. Yeah. That is exactly what had happened until 1557, when they had to say something was equal to something else. They would write the letter AE, which stood for aequus, and that is what it meant.
Aequus,
And he had to write it down multiple times, and he came up with this idea of Gemmell lines, which is just two parallel lines, tiny parallel lines, which basically meant that what was on the left-hand side is also equal to something that's on the right-hand side.
Yeah.
And Robert was quite a prodigy himself. He was selected for Oxford at a very young age of 14. And at 21, he started teaching there. And his earlier work was about urinology. And later, he switched to writing poems and hymns. And in between all of this, he did a whole lot of maths. And now this is something really, I don't know how to put it. It's just so bizarre and it's so amazing that the consequence of this one line that I'll say next pretty much changed how we look at world. The first equation ever which used an equal to sign and thus basically became the first equation that we can ever trace back to was a simple equation, 14x plus 15 is equal to 71. That was the equation. The first time in his notes, he decided to stop using AE. He made two lines and said 14x plus 15 is equal to 71. And it took a while, but now all of us, even a 4-year-old kid would know what is equal to sign is.
What an equal to sign. Right. I had no idea that there was such an amazing backstory behind it. I always thought it was one of these things, like how the plus sign came about or something like that. Very interesting.
I don't know actually how a plus sign came about. Do you know that?
No, I just assumed that it's one of those things that somebody had drawn it once and now we're just following it the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
So I didn't know. I'm not sure if there was something behind it, but I'm going to look this up now. Maybe there is some reasoning behind all what we see in math. One very quick thing on the previous question. Mm-hmm. Did he intend it to be an equal to sign called the Gemmell lines, or was it something that it became later on?
He intended it to be an equal to, because earlier he had to write the letters A-E-Q-A. Instead of writing it, and because he was doing a mathematical equation of sorts, he was writing it multiple times and he was doing his research. So instead of, just imagine if you're doing a quadratic equation and you have to write one word every time. So he just made it a couple of lines and said, you know what, let these lines be an equal to sign.
You've given me 10 standard anxiety by mentioning quadratic. Suddenly, I was like, oh, no.
How did we solve that? I actually don't remember how did we solve that.
I have no idea, man. Not my strong
Let's
point.
Let's not go there. Let's not go there. We'll be okay without it. This is just a quick reminder that you guys should check out our newsletter, Discontent. It is free. We have YouTube videos, we have movie recommendations, we have podcast recommendations, we have music albums and articles, all of it for free, delivered right into your inbox twice a week. If you want to subscribe, just go to the link in the description, or just right now, just minimize this podcast app, quickly go to your browser and look for discontent.substack.com and you will find the newsletter. Now, back to your show.
So for my next question, so by profession, I'm a filmmaker. Okay, and film has been something it's been the standard in my house, even growing up. We've learned from films, we've grown up on films, it's been a part of my life, my lifestyle, even till date.
But yeah.
So my next question is inspired by what, in my opinion, is one of the best filmmakers there is out there.
Interesting.
So we shall call this filmmaker X in this case, right?
Yes.
So when X was mixing the American Graffiti soundtrack, he used one letter prefixes to number the reels and the dialogues of the film.
Mm-hmm.
So he had dozed off while he was working. Mm-hmm. And the sound designer who was with him, who was Walter Murch, that's M-U-R-C-H, asked for the second dialogue of the second reel, saying a particular phrase. X woke up with a jolt, stated that that's a great name, the phrase that Walter had used. He said that's a great name and went back to sleep. That particular phrase was later used in one of the most popular films of all time. So identify X, and if you get X, you will get the phrase.
So Adil, one day X was driving in his car and in his passenger seat was his dog, his loyal dog, an Alaskan Malamute. And at that time, this X was writing the same movie that you were talking about. And in that movie, there is this character, and the character sort of needed a sidekick. And this director X looked at this Alaskan Malamute and he said, "I had an Alaskan Malamute when I was writing this film. A very sweet dog. She would always sit next to me while I was writing, and whenever I was driving around, she would be sitting in the front seat. An Alaskan Malamute is a huge dog, 130 pounds or so, larger than a human being, and a very long head. Having her next to me all the time inspired me to create this character as a sidekick for this another character. And basically, it all comes down to Señor Lucas. And what you talked about was the origins of R2-D2, and what I spoke about was the origins of Chewbacca.
Chewbacca, yes, very much correct. I love it. Like, if you're a Star Wars fan, you're automatically like, you and me can sit down and have conversations till the cows come home, man. Like,
I'll tell you my Star Wars story. I saw it quite late. I saw it barely a couple of years ago. And I saw the first movie, the fourth movie, New Hope.
Correct.
And when I saw that, it was only when I had thought about it that how much of cinema has been inspired by that movie. Then that's when I realized how amazing this movie is. Because if you watch it now, you'll say, this is normal. Yeah, good side, bad side, they'll fight. But when you see scenes, when you see shots and you see, oh, all of this came from this one film. It came from this moment, this look, this dialogue. That's when you realize, Star Wars was way ahead of its time, or how much Star Wars has influenced our popular culture.
It's a cult. That's the only way you can describe it today. It's translated through so much through time. Even in film, it's crazy. And the special effects especially, I think it sparked that revolution to a very large extent, because the kind of organic special effects, VFX that we call today, that they were doing, very practical VFX, not too much computer-oriented VFX, which was the rabbit hole that led to where we are today with even something as you know, dynamic as the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So it is crazy. I'm so glad that you picked up on the George Lucas R2-D2 stuff. Amazing.
Yeah, it is quite amazing. And I mean, it is something that you should definitely, if you are listening to this, go check out one of the Star Wars movies. Start with 4. I actually not seen the prequel trilogies. I started once, but I fell asleep.
No!
And I basically like got a gist of what happened in the prequel trilogy. And I got to the present day trilogy, the Rian Johnson's and J.J. Abrams trilogy. And I saw the last movie in theater. So that was like, yay. I'm almost there.
But no, you need to. You really need to see the.
I saw Jar Jar Binks, and I was like, "Yeah, I've seen enough." That's a joke. That's a joke. No. I have nothing against Jar Jar. He's a nice person.
No. This is again one of those things that translated through pop culture. He is one character.
All right. Now moving on to the next question. One quick shout out before we move to the next question. I really want you all to check out Cricket Quota, the new newsletter that we've started about the game we love, that is cricket. The biggest stories, nostalgia, well, lots of nostalgia about the game, memes of the game, videos of the game, all carefully curated. Check us out at cricketquota.substack.com. Subscribe to the newsletter to get all this cricketing action straight to your inbox for free. And now, back to your show. And the next question is, well, we come back to real life from the world of fantasy. But as always, real life is at times more bizarre than fantasy. So Europe had Eurovision, right? So every year, all these countries would from across Europe would come. You know about Eurovision, Vasil?
Yes, very much.
Yeah, the song contest, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's what Europe had. Each country would nominate one act or one artist or one band, and they would go and perform at Eurovision, and then there would be a poll and things like that, and basically there would be judges and points would be given and one person would win. So that is what Europe had, and this is during the Soviet era. The Soviets also wanted to do something similar, so they created Intervision. Now, the Intervision Song Contest was a song competition which involved participants from the member states of the Soviet Union. And basically, Soviets saw how popular Eurovision was going, and they said, you know what, we'll create our own Eurovision. We'll call it Intervision. The year was 1977, and it was pretty much set up by the Soviet Union. But surprising for something Soviet, it had a voting feature where people, ordinary people like you and I, could vote for their favorite participants. Now, I must remind you that the year is 1977 and phones were very expensive at that time, and also only a few people had them. Mostly, phones were limited to government offices. Using mail/post would take too much time, but they wanted people to vote. So, the directors of the show wanted voting by any means, and in that, you know, thought process that we want them to vote somehow, they came up with one of the most ingenious methods of voting. Can you tell me what method is this? Let me tell you, there's not much in the question that will lead you to the answer, except for that it is some form of voting, but it is the most ingenious form of voting you can imagine. So if you have a guess, go bizarre, go all over the place, because this is really amazing.
I'm absolutely drawing a blank here. I have no idea. Because I was going to initially like a very no guess tele voting, but then you told me that you hinted it that there is no voting system. There was no telephone system at the time that was easily accessible.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really unable to figure this. Any clue that you can help me with?
Yeah, let me try to give you a clue. It is, again, as I said, it is really bizarre way of doing it. And if you think about it, it is quite an ingenious way of doing it. So basically, everyone is at their homes, right? And they are watching TV and they have to vote. Somehow, they have to do something which will communicate to the government, because this is a government-run show. So they have to somehow communicate to the government instantaneously that what their vote is. So what could they do from the comfort of their homes that could be like an instant message back in the day?
Turn their TV off? I don't know.
Okay, so you are sort of in the right line of basically answering.
Okay,
if they turn their TV off, then maybe they wouldn't be able to watch the rest of the show. Maybe something else on those lines.
So it was live tracking, right? It wasn't like a delayed voting system. It would be...
No, it was live tracking, yeah.
Live tracking, okay. The Soviet era, something on the lines of turning the TV off.
Yeah. That was a very good guess, actually. It's sort of in the same vicinity. You're in the vicinity is what I'll say.
My thinking is basically when you turn the TV off, you lose a viewer on the TRP rating. I don't know if they tracked TRP back then.
I don't think TRP was a thing back then.
Exactly. Okay.
But
so
you are right. You are right. They would do something and they would track it, and hence they would figure it out. Okay, who got voted for or things like that.
Turning the power off, like in that line. But then, how do you track it? Even then, wait. If you turn the power off, nobody can track it. What else can it be?
Okay. Should I give you the answer for this? Unless you want to have another crack. Because you're really close.
I would like
really
to take
close.
Another crack.
Okay, you're like really close. You're really close.
Yeah, okay, I'm really close. All right, okay.
Okay, let me give you a tiny hint.
Okay, lovely.
They didn't switch off things. They didn't switch off the light. They switched them on.
Oh, okay. So was it... No, but then how do you...
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming that this would have been a popular show. And mm-hmm. back in the 70s, if a lot of people turned their lights on, there would have been some kind of fluctuation, like how the British girls have the tea time mm-hmm. thing.
What is the British tea time thing?
I'm a little vague in my memory, but I can recall it. Apparently, there was a... it was called the tea time power surge or something to that extent,
mm-hmm.
wherein during matches, especially football matches and
uh-huh.
Cricket matches at the time, electricity board would have to deal with a power surge, because when there would be an advertisement, for example, or there would be a break, everybody would get up and turn on their kettles for tea or turn on some other appliance at the same time, which the electric board could not hold that capacity together,
uh-huh.
because it would be something that happened at the same time. So they would have to plan during matches and during events and shows to account for that extra surge. So when you say turning lights on, that's the first thing that
is
my
that
mind.
Is actually what exactly happened.
Okay, but how do you then decide who's the vote going to, though?
So what the Russian authorities did, the Soviet authorities did, they knew what is the usual consumption of electricity at a certain time.
Okay.
And when a certain person's performance went out, what they suggested to the people was switch on all your appliances. And for the performance, the most appliances would be switched on and they would get a spike because the load would go high. And for whom the load went the highest, that meant that those many people were in favor of that person winning. And that is how they decided who would win. Basically, everyone had to switch on their appliances, and at the Bijliga Center, they would see, okay, this person has got so much votes and hence there's so much load on the grid. That is how they calculated in real time.
Ingenious. That is ingenious. It does have, like, in my hope, like, if I know that if I were watching something growing up and if I turned on all the appliances of the house, my dad would have just whacked. You know, he would have given me a beating and sent me out. Forget TV. Like... So that is ingenious.
Yeah, that's 90s kids will remember that.
Cannot able to, bro. You cannot. Turning on appliances was a big no-no growing up.
Yeah. And imagine, that's what the entire Soviet Union was doing that. All countries and countries of people were just switching on their lights and fans and what they have, like toasters, just so that there would be a spike and then they would calculate
support.
Yeah, to their favorite performance.
That is very cool. That is very cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Now it's your turn to ask me the next question.
Okay. So I'm going to transition from film, because my love, to something else that I'm super passionate about, which is wildlife. Okay. And this this transition could be your first clue. I'm going to list out a bunch of animals, five of them specifically, actually. And I just need you to tell me which is the odd one out and why. Cool.
Okay. Okay.
So we have the black bear.
Okay.
The black panther.
Mm-hmm.
The Bengal tiger.
Mm-hmm.
An orangutan.
Mm-hmm.
And a wolf.
A black bear. A black panther.
Yes.
And an orangutan.
Yes.
A wolf. And which was the one which was missing?
The Bengal tiger.
Bengal tiger. So one of them is not like the rest. I will tell you which one. And why?
Yes.
This has to do with the animals and not with their names or, you know, not Bengal tiger is Sourav Ganguly. We don't have to go into those directions.
No,
right?
No. Something to do with the animals itself. I can give you a clue.
Is it to do with their name and what color their fur is? Something?
No. Nothing like that. I can give you a clue which maybe will point you in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
Think of a situation or a scenario where these five animals would be seen at the same time. Where would you have normally seen them?
Okay, one second. Let me just quickly write these down. It'll help me figure it out. So there is a black panther.
Correct.
A black bear.
Correct.
A Royal Bengal tiger.
Yes.
A wolf.
Yes.
And an orangutan. I have one theory, but I don't know how they will fit into that theory.
Okay.
But is this related to a movie/book?
Yes, sir. You're on the right track very much.
Then I know what you are talking about. These are what was his name? Jan Mantel or no? Forgot his name. The author of Life of Pi.
The author? No, you're on the right track, but the wrong movie.
Wrong movie/book. So this was, in Life of Pi, when Pi is saved, there is this story that he is with a Royal Bengal tiger, and before that there's the orangutan, and that's why I said a wolf doesn't fit into the picture.
No, you are on the right track when you're thinking of fiction in terms of a book and a movie, but you're in the wrong movie. there isn't much though. If you just you can put it together, there isn't much more that you can.
So is it has this movie been done in animation?
Yes, very much. And then later on a live action version as well.
So we are talking about Mowgli and his friends.
Yes.
So there is a Black Panther, which is our Bagheera.
Correct.
There is a Bengal tiger, which is Sher Khan, I'm assuming. Sher Khan was a Royal Bengal tiger.
Correct.
There is Baloo.
Yes.
So that's the black bear. There is an orangutan also, if I'm not mistaken. I think between the wolf and orangutan, King Louis. So the one left is a wolf then.
There is a wolf in the story as well called Akila.
Oh, that's his mother.
Yes.
So who's the odd one out then?
You're there. There is another reason why there one of this is an odd one out. I'll give you a clue. So the author of the book, Rudyard Kipling, was a huge wildlife enthusiast at the time. He has based all the characters in the book specifically, on animals that he knew were native to the country. But something didn't translate into film, one of the things that he had done. Or rather, something extra was translated into film.
So is it something like we had, instead of an orangutan, we had a langur or some form of thing?
No, not at all.
Let me think. So there's something which has happened between the book and... Or did he not...
Remember that this is a wildlife question. So it has something to do with the animals themselves.
Okay. The fact that Rudyard Kipling based his book in Sioni, if I'm not mistaken, which is an MP, and you won't find a Royal Bengal tiger there? I'm just
Do find Bengal tigers in MP.
I'm just clutching.
But again, right train of thought, wrong animal.
So which
very,
animal?
Very correct train of thought.
Yeah.
Shall I tell you?
Is the fact that we can't... we have black panthers in India.
We do, yes.
We might have a few of them, but we do have black panthers. I remember a picture which was clicked a few years ago in Karnataka. It got very famous.
Yes, by Saad Jung.
A wolf is... a wolf. Do we have wolves? Yeah, we have wolves in India. Do we have orangutans in? But why would he keep an orangutan then? Okay, can you tell me the answer, or if you can give me a hint?
Hint? So again, you touched on it and you moved away from it just now. You're on the absolute right track. I think I'll give you the answer here. The orangutan is not native to the Indian subcontinent. And thereby, King Louis, the character, did not exist in the book.
Okay. And that's only in the movies that we see
King Louis. In the movie that Disney bought him in, primarily for comic relief. Because that's what the character wanted to create. And they went with a creature that was not in the books, first of all, and wasn't native to the Indian subcontinent at all. Because Rudyard Kipling's idea behind the Jungle Book was to instill, the love for wildlife and animals in India at a younger age.
Okay.
One of his inspirations behind the book was that book. So the orangutan, for example, was not part of the subspecies here.
Where are orangutans normally found? Is there a, do you know?
There are Southeast Asia orangutans. There are orangutans found in various parts of Africa. Africa, I don't know. But Southeast Asia, I'm confident that there are. So they are native to that little more, west.
Oh, yeah. I just actually looked it up on the internet. The name orang-utan means man of the forest in the Malay language. And they are great apes native to the rainforest of Indonesia and Malaysia. They are now found only in parts of Borneo and Sumatra.
Correct. So they're not, native to the Indian subcontinent.
And, okay, I didn't know King Louis did not exist in the book.
No, he's absolutely not there.
That's interesting. That's an interesting question. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
So now we move to the last question of today's show. And Adil, how we do it is the last question is for the audience. So you have a question with you. You get to ask that question to our audience. And the audience can later send in the answers over social media, over Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We are at the Red Podcast Studio 41 or the Quiz Time India handles on Instagram and on Facebook. So they can send in the answers there. And then we pick one winner from the list of people who send in the answers. So Adil, the next question that you'll be asking will be for the audience. So please ask your next question.
Lovely. So very interesting one for you guys. Simple again. What did Outlook magazine humorously describe as the biggest sex change operation in independent India? That's it. That's my question.
I think I repeated. Yeah, that is great.
I'm repeating. What did Outlook magazine humorously describe as the biggest sex change operation in independent India?
And if you could give them a timeline, that would be great. Like approximate timeline. I think this millennium itself, right?
Yes, this millennium itself. Correct.
Yeah. All right. So that is the answer. That is the question, sorry. And you can send in your answers to us, as I mentioned, on social media, on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, if you want to get in touch with us at Studio 41, or Instagram and Facebook on Quiz Time India. And with that, we come to the end of this episode. Adil, it was an absolute pleasure to chat with you, to quiz with you.
Thank you very much for having me. This is my first podcast ever and I was quite nervous, but you've been a beautiful guide through this entire process. I'm very appreciative. And thank you for the QTI podcast as well. A lot of us, we learn so much through quizzing, and the idea is to propagate a quiz culture.
Yeah.
So thank you for being a soldier in that.
All right. So with that, we bring this episode to an end. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining in. We will be back hopefully next week. So with that, take care. Bye-bye. Thank you for your time. Thank me for my night. And that brings us to the end of the episode. The podcast was hosted and produced by me, Aditya. The questions were researched and said by Anisha, Hisham, Keshav, Rishabh, Madhavan, Binayak and Ananda. This episode was edited by Pranjal Gupta. Basically, big props to everyone who came together to make this show. Remember, you as an audience can support this show by contributing to the podcast. You can contribute via Instamojo, you can contribute via PayPal, you can contribute via UPI. All the links will be in the description. Contribute whatever amount you like. No amount is less and every penny counts. If you're confused, what is a good amount? Well, it's up to you. You can buy us a coffee, you can buy us a biryani, you can buy us a 5-course dinner. It is entirely up to you. Links are in the description. That will be all for today. Thank you so much. Take care of yourself until we meet again. Goodbye.